Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
There was a lot of illegality and shady dealings within wrestling.
Welcome to episode 64 of The Great Fail, a podcast that examines the greatest success stories and their spectacular fails, what led to the demise of the most prolific people, brands, and companies. I'm your host, Deborah Chen, and this week we'll be looking at the rise and fall of Vince McMahon. What do you think of when you hear the word wrestling?
The mega powers with Hulk Hogan and the Macho Man Randy Savage.
Hulk Hogan.
Brother. Jimmy Superfly Snuka.
The Rock.
The Undertaker.
Paul Bearer.
Mankind and Chainsaw Charlie.
DX. Suck it. Roman
Reigns. The bad guys. Iron Sheik. Roddy Piper.
Andre the Giant. 7'4" and 500 pounds.
Jake the Snake Roberts.
Mankind.
Bret Hart.
Tables and Chairs.
The Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase.
Cage Match.
Royal Rumble.
SmackDown.
Big pay-per-view events.
Monday Night Raw.
The Royal Rumble.
Thursday Night SmackDown.
WrestleMania.
Cody Rhodes.
Suck It.
The People's Eyebrow.
The Hardy Boys.
Stephanie McMahon.
Vince McMahon.
Of course, Vince McMahon.
Vince McMahon.
Vince McMahon.
Vince McMahon.
American wrestling, which most notably revolves around the WWE brand, owes much of its success to the influential presence of the McMahons, Vince McMahon most of all. But in light of recent allegations made against him, we thought, well, what better time to revisit his remarkable journey, what led to his ascent into the wrestling world to become a media mogul, and then what has precipitated the dramatic fall from grace that he now faces. There's no doubt about the influence he had on wrestling and the way he turned the likes of Dwayne The Rock Johnson, John Cena, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and Hulk Hogan into household names, as well as his role in creating the blueprint for pay-per-view programming. However, in the wake of the legacy he has left behind are these allegations, a dirty laundry list that includes sexual misconduct and lawsuits claiming his abuse of power. For more than four decades, he was both an executive and a performer in his own show, acting as the diabolical Mr. McMahon. But to what extent does the fiction intertwine or blur into reality? Welcome to the story of Vince McMahon Jr. entering the ring in 1971, getting the smackdown of his career by 2024. This marks the first episode in the next series of Great Fail episodes, and what better topic than one that has taken the media by storm since the start of the year. On January 26, 2024, 78-year-old Vince McMahon, the co-founder of World Wrestling Entertainment, WWE, announced his resignation in the wake of a lawsuit accusing him of sexual assault and sex trafficking by a former employee. While this isn't the first time McMahon has faced allegations of sexual misconduct, The recent revelations are profoundly unsettling, leaving many to ponder what this means for him, his legacy, and the future of WWE. Professional wrestling is a niche interest and a world with its own culture and mythology, one that touches people in a way I personally was surprised to find. Many years ago, I worked as a communications director for Shane McMahon, Vince's son, as he pursued business ventures outside of wrestling. The night before a conference in Abu Dhabi, we were walking around the lobby of our hotel that was attached to several five-star restaurants that required reservations in advance. Coming off of a long flight, that wasn't something that we had planned for in advance, so we picked one expecting to put our name down for a long wait. But instead, the wait staff went into a frenzy the moment they realized who Shane was. And while that was a pleasant surprise, it was what happened next that made the story stick with me. One of the servers came toward him on the verge of tears and shared how WWE had changed his life. He told us how he, his father, and son, three generations, would gather around each week and watch the WWE programming, no matter what was going on in their lives, that it was their sacred time, their moment to bond. And needless to say, a table was made on the spot, Goodfella style. But I understood then that this was more than just wrestling or just a show. It was a culture transcending so many barriers, even reaching across the globe to Abu Dhabi. The WWE leveraged storytelling and persona to literally create heroes and villains that could capture the fascination of audiences and hold onto it for years, launching some to stardom. Vince McMahon's own story is one that many might find inspiring because he rose from poverty to become the king of an entertainment empire. Vincent Kennedy was born in 1945 in North Carolina. His father left when he was just a baby, and so he was raised by his mother and stepdad. These were humble beginnings for him, one which he had later characterized as abusive. Many of his childhood friends later described him as quiet and unassuming, a nice kid who never got into any fights. But that changed when he turned 12 and reconnected with his birth dad, Vince McMahon Sr. For this episode, we invited Abraham Josephine Reisman, investigative biographer and author of Ringmaster, Vince McMahon and the Unmaking of America, to provide her perspective. After interviews with more than 150 people, here's how she describes his childhood.
Vince's background is very interesting and kind of bifurcated. On the one hand, his father, Vincent James McMahon, who a lot of people refer to as Vince Sr. now, Vincent James McMahon was a rich, successful, powerful professional wrestling promoter in the Northeast. But Vince didn't know his biological father until he was about 12. For those first 12 years, he was living in poverty in North Carolina with his mother and his stepfather. Very different upbringing from what he would have had if he'd been raised by his biological father. But at 12, he does meet his biological father, and these two worlds kind of collide in his head. In some ways, he's kind of both halves of the Republican coalition in that he is a working class guy from the South, but he's also a corporate heir from the Northeast. It's a strange little dichotomy, but he had a difficult childhood by the accounts I could come up with. He seemingly was abused by his stepfather physically, but he certainly was growing up in harsh conditions. I mean, I visited the places where he grew up in North Carolina, in Havelock, North Carolina. He was living there for a while, and the neighborhood he was in was called Splinterville because all the houses were made from cheap wood. It was really a scraping by existence. So when Vince meets his father at 12, he has this window into a completely different world of comfort, wealth, and power.
Vince Sr. was this wrestling promoter extraordinaire and the owner of Capital Wrestling Corporation, which later became Worldwide Wrestling Federation, WWF, which you might remember if you grew up in the 80s and 90s. So this was his entry into the world of wrestling, which he never really watched growing up. With his dad's tutelage, he started learning the ropes. And what we know about Vince Sr. is that he's this very old school personality, not particularly interested in the welfare of his wrestlers, a profits over people mentality. He once told Vince Jr. that wrestlers are like seagulls. All they do is eat, shit, and squat all day. And then there's the way Vince Jr. took on the role of TV announcer, another example of Sr.'s ruthless approach to management. When a well-known broadcaster asked for a raise, Vince Sr. didn't hesitate to fire him on the spot and then put his son on the air, showing that the family meant business with the old-school boss mentality that it's my way or the highway. And by 1983, Vince Jr. had taken over World Wrestling Federation from his father and was determined to shake things up. And he did so on many levels.
His father was very much a product of the old wrestling world, which was a backroom deal kind of environment. It was a place where the country, well, the United States and Canada, were carved up into regional territories. And it was almost like a series of mob chieftains controlling territories. But it was a stable, corrupt piece. You know, there was a lot of illegality and shady dealings within wrestling, but it was a stable system, and Vince Sr. had really profited in it. So when Vince Jr. ends up taking over the company, immediately he and his father start clashing, because his father is still a well-known person in wrestling, and his reputation is somewhat on the line. He's getting angry calls all the time. But Vince plows ahead with this plan that Vince Sr. never would have wanted, which is national domination, crowding the market out with your product and becoming the main game in town. And that was not what Vince Sr. wanted for his company.
Vince McMahon's idea was to destroy all the traditional boundaries in wrestling. He broke the rules, he invaded other promoters' regions with live shows, secretly purchased TV slots, and bought out his competitors.
Vince was extremely aggressive in the marketplace when he was trying to beat out his rivals in the 1980s and 90s. In the 80s, it was kind of a free-for-all of him going after a bunch of different regional promotions. And then in the 90s, it was him going after the one remaining promotion, which was Ted Turner's World Championship Wrestling. But by 2001, he defeated all comers. There was no one left. He, in 2001, bought out WCW and what remained of the distant third promotion, Extreme Championship Wrestling. And how did he do that? Well, a lot of tactics. I mean, you can't easily summarize it, but everything from signing unprecedented exclusivity deals with venues and television stations to say, hey, you're going to run my product and not the person who usually runs it in this town.
He knew the time to expand was now. For decades, wrestling promotions had depended on syndicated television to reach their customers. This allowed the territory system to thrive. If you are only on local TV, then you can run angles in your territory, while other promoters could run angles in their territory on their TV stations. But cable TV changed everything, and Vince saw the future. He signed talent, toured them nationally through cable, which killed the regional territories and made him a killing. This is how he assumed control of the business and transformed a regional operation into a global phenomenon.
Everything from when he was starting to get a pay-per-view event off the ground, once he told all the cable stations that provided the pay-per-view, if you also provide my competitor's pay-per-view event, I won't give you WrestleMania. And that meant the number of cable places willing to run the rivals event dropped to like two or three. I can't remember the exact number, but it was in the single digits. So he did a lot that is regarded as somewhat shady or underhanded, but he was able to get away with it. And he got rid of the regional promotions pretty much one by one. Sometimes he would just buy them out or co-opt them and they would just surrender. But other times he had to really bludgeon them to death, stealing talent from them. And I say stealing, you know, I mean, it's not stealing, I guess. He pays them more money, they're going to come over and work for him. But it was all very much against the ethos of the way things used to be, and yet it became the way things are.
Now, when it comes to traditional wrestling, the rules are pretty straightforward. The wins and losses are pretty clear. But the rules in WWE, well, that's a whole other ballgame. WWE has often stated that they were an entertainment-driven enterprise with scripted storylines and choreographed matches, a delineation between fiction and reality. But for those who follow what was going on both in the ring and outside, over time, they saw that distinction gradually blurred. On the programming side, Vince McMahon started to lean in heavily on the script, which featured an all-star cast of characters that garnered loyal followings who were willing to pay a monthly fee to access WWE's streaming service. And perhaps more significantly, McMahon inserted himself into the storyline drama. He frequently appeared in the ring as Mr. McMahon, a persona closely mirroring his life self. The thing is, he had a knack for playing that villain, the jerk boss with tons of power who abused people for the sake of doing so. And you know what? People were endeared to this villainous character. And by 2001, there weren't any competitors left. And he became the King of the Ring. Wrestling, despite all of its glory, had always had a dark side, and there were no brighter red flags than the fact that the wrestlers weren't getting proper health care benefits. Think about it. Many of the contracts were exploitative, which meant they were restricted from pursuing other opportunities outside WWE. They were also subject to unsafe working conditions like the pressure to perform even when injured. And storylines had twists and turns that were really at the whim of the ringmaster. There was also toxic work environments, no labor unions unlike so many other industries, and so wrestlers had less bargaining power, less ability to advocate for better contracts and better working conditions.
Wrestling is a very exploitative and abusive industry, just in terms of its labor practices. At a baseline level, all wrestlers are independent contractors. They are not employees. They don't have health care provided by their employer, which is not even their technical employer. They have no union.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
And there is very little in the way of job protection or free speech protections. On top of that, you have to sign exclusivity agreements with WWE in order to wrestle for them, even though you're an independent contractor. You can't go wrestle for rivals.
Life on the road was hard on the wrestlers' bodies. Many of our heroes from the 80s and 90s are no longer alive. Many have died from substance abuse, including pain medications, or heart issues from steroid use. Fast forward 40 years later, there is still no union, no health insurance, no retirement plan. The pay for some is not ideal, especially starting out as a newcomer.
So he, at a baseline, has exploited the reality of how exploitative wrestling has been in the past. But he goes even further. I mean, there's a laundry list of incidents in which Vince has humiliated his wrestlers on live television. I mean, most notably, the so-called Montreal Screwjob of 1997 was this moment where Bret Hart, one of the biggest stars in the history of wrestling, had the script flipped on him in the middle of a fair at the end of a very important match. It was going to be his last match in the company. And he was the champion, and he ended up getting the script flipped on him, and he was forced to lose the belt, despite the fact that the script called for something else as a result. And it remains the most talked about thing about Bret Hart. He has to live with the humiliation of this extremely unethical business maneuver being executed on him on live television before the eyes of millions. And that's not even getting into the allegations of sexual assault and misconduct and harassment that Vince has faced over the course of his decades in charge of the World Wrestling Federation and World Wrestling Entertainment.
Then came the litany of accusations. There have been allegations going back as early as the late 80s, but after a wave of sexual misconduct allegations against him, Vince was forced to step down as CEO in 2022. Surprisingly, even with his departure, getting testimonials and witnesses against him proved challenging because executives, wrestlers, and even people from rival companies were reluctant to come forward. This underscored how incredibly insular the wrestling world has been and how that enabled those in the industry's upper echelons to evade accountability. A WWE board conducted an investigation in 2022 and discovered that the company spent at least $14.6 million in a course of 16 years as hush money. That's money made to women to suppress allegations of sexual misconduct and infidelity. One was made by a former wrestler who said that Mr. McMahon had coerced her into giving him oral sex and then later decided not to renew her contract, according to the Wall Street Journal.
You have to understand, wrestling is an ecosystem. It's not just a television show. Wrestling figured out earlier than most other mediums how to exploit online media. So, no, when you're watching the show, Survivor Series 1997, where the Montreal Screwjob happened, if you're not literate in what's going on, it would just look like a finish of a wrestling match that looked a little awkward. I mean, you might notice that Bret Hart hadn't submitted, hadn't said, "I quit," and tapped out, but he was still ruled as though he had, so you might be confused by it. But what it took was people rushing to their computers and getting on Usenet and talking at a fevered pitch about what they thought just happened. And eventually, as reports came out in newsletters and online groups, it became clear that it had not been what was scripted to happen and that Bret was furious. And then there was the reports of, you know, they had a fist fight after the screw job backstage. And this is the kind of guy Vince McMahon is and the kind of environment wrestling is. You know, there was a fist fight between Vince and Bret backstage, and there were no charges pressed. I mean, think about it. This is a major CEO getting decked by one of his talent after he's done something incredibly unethical to that talent. And, you know, police weren't involved. It's very much an internally handled matter, every kind of infraction that happens in wrestling. They try to keep the rest of the world out of it. And yes, distinguishing between reality and fantasy, it's very difficult to distinguish between those two when it comes to Vince McMahon. And that's very deliberate. And it's been very useful for Vince McMahon.
This was reminiscent of a ringmaster and his adept skill in artfully navigating and controlling his circus.
He played a version of himself that was very evil on television called Mr. McMahon. And that got him out of a lot because everyone sort of in the back of their minds assumes, well, he plays an evil version of himself on television. That means he knows the difference between good and evil, and surely everyone would choose to do good, right? Well, you end up with this very confused and blurred set of boundaries where he does unconscionable stuff on television and says it's a joke, and you hear about allegations of things that are unconscionable happening behind the scenes, And it's hard to wrap your mind around whether they're real or not, and whether that's just Vince being Vince. I mean, that's the other thing, is there's a certain resignation that a lot of people have within wrestling about, well, Vince is just Vince. What are you going to do? Nothing takes him down. It becomes a self-reinforcing cycle where the more challenges he overcomes, the more allegations he manages to avoid facing consequences for, then the more people just feel powerless and throw up their hands and say, well, what are you going to do? That's Vince being Vince.
Despite resigning in 2022, he returned at his own volition in 2023, well-timed as the dust settled on the allegations. And in true Vince fashion, he showed that he was still the guy who held the whip to direct and control. And then he struck one of the biggest deals in wrestling history with the sports and entertainment conglomerate Endeavor. He sold WWE, spinning it into a new public company called TKO Group, which was announced in January of 2024. TKO Group sold its rights of WWE's Raw to Netflix for $5 billion, marking it as one of the biggest deals for Netflix's entry into live programming. But that glory was short-lived. It was quickly overshadowed by an even more damning revelation, as yet another former employee filed a lawsuit alleging that Vince had coerced her into engaging in sexual activities with him and other men. This claim seemed different than the ones that have come before.
It's definitely different this time around. Whether it's Vince's downfall all the way to the ground, no idea. I mean, he's gotten out of so many tight spots in the past. The federal government took him to trial for steroid distribution in 1994. And if the DOJ takes you to trial, usually you don't get out of that. But he got found not guilty. He was able to get out of that, and I think that really emboldened him. But that also means the feds kind of have a grudge against Mr. McMahon and don't want to get embarrassed again. So right now, you have not only these allegations and his resignation, but you have an ongoing federal probe that already included seizing his phone last year and has now reportedly expanded to include the sex trafficking allegations. With that widening federal probe, the pressure is really on. And especially with these new allegations of trafficking and assault, the lawsuit explicitly says that a lot of people knew about what was happening at the company. So shareholders are going to have questions about that. Ari Emanuel, I'm sure, has questions about that. These are questions that probably should have been asked a lot sooner about power and control and abuse. But now it's a really pressing matter that the company is really having to take a close look at. And I don't see a way for Vince to force himself back this time. He's a minority shareholder now. He already sold off a bunch of his shares, so he doesn't have the financial power he had the last time he resigned, which was just a prelude to him forcing his way back in and getting his vengeance again.
Over and over, the stories that come across our desk that dominate headlines in both business and culture are the ones about abuse by powerful people. These abuses are typically not new. Vince learned how to manage wrestlers from his dad in the 70s, and the red flags we see from that persist to today. But they are becoming increasingly visible, shedding light on pervasive problems that have often been overlooked or deliberately concealed, in this case, at the tune of at least $14.6 million. But recent years have seen a surge in cases coming to light, exposing the ways in which people in positions of authority have been able to exploit their power for personal gain and manipulate those in vulnerable positions. One of the contributing factors to this phenomenon is a longstanding culture of silence and fear that surrounded many industries. Victims often hesitate to come forward due to concerns about retaliation, damage to their careers, or disbelief of their allegations. And that imbalance of power creates an environment where those in authority can act with impunity, knowing that the structures in place may not effectively hold them accountable.
I think the big lesson I take away from this as a bleeding heart is, if we're not careful, all of American labor is headed the way of pro wrestling. I mean, pro wrestling was the gig economy before it was cool. It was not just the gig economy. It's never been anything other than that. You just don't get employed full-time employed jobs within wrestling, unless you get up to sort of the executive level or you're doing a desk job. When you're doing the actual creative work of being a wrestling performer, your life is incredibly precarious, and your health is on the line without health care. Your bargaining rights don't exist because there's no union. I mean, this is a picture that is more and more familiar to Americans and others. And I think Vince McMahon's story in many ways is a cautionary tale about what corporate America is tending towards these days in terms of labor exploitation and also in terms of just sheer disregard for the difference between fact and fiction. I mean, you look at somebody like Elon Musk who will just say, hey, I did a Neuralink trial. It was successful. And everybody reports it and doesn't bother looking into whether it really happened. You know, it's just because he wrote a tweet. And Trump was doing that with tweets before that. But prior to both of them, Vince was the one really learning how to manipulate reality by using the strategy of never apologize, never explain, never even clarify. Let people be confused, let them get bad information mixed in with very good information and things in between. And you can just get away with anything because either people will tune you out because they're confused and then you can get away with them not paying attention, or they're paying a lot of attention because they're trying to sort out what's real or what isn't, or just taking the weird experience of that mix of reality and unreality and letting it wash over them. In all cases, he wins. But I think that free ride does seem to be starting to come to an end, or at least a great slowdown right now.
Witnessing the downfall of the most powerful, influential man of wrestling has a bit of a poignant irony, but also reminds me of something I reflect on episode after episode, and on why I do cover these great fails. Because it boils down to the fact that people make the same mistakes over and over, and the idea of reaching the pinnacle success, an illusion of invincibility, but then making critical errors along the way become cautionary tales that we can all learn from, whether it be in industry like technology, healthcare, retail, or anywhere else. The same theme is recurring, that we oftentimes turn a blind eye to those we deem geniuses. And perhaps the story has less to do with Vince McMahon as a businessman and more about societal tendencies to venerate demigods and disregard our moral compass when we mistake power and fame as moral virtues. That somehow Vince's key role in the ring and at the top of his empire might make him more credible or invincible. It seems this time, McMahon's departure is different and puts the wrestling business in uncharted waters because for the first time in 40 years, none of the McMahons are involved in the business. For some, this is seen as an opportunity to make wrestling more progressive, create better working conditions, more diversity, better scripts that empower women in an industry where women account for 40% of the WWE fan base. But was it just great irony or a sly decision for him to play the villain across the wrestlers and employees he's accused of mistreating? Because as the final curtains descend on the circus, once led by the ringmaster himself, we find him in a karmic twist where a new plot emerges that even the invincible Vince McMahon could not have written better. The demise of his greatest character of all, himself. Special thanks to Abraham Josephine Reisman for her contributions to this episode and sharing insights from her book, Ringmaster, Vince McMahon and the Unmaking of America. And thank you for tuning in this week to The Great Fail, a program that spotlights some of the most infamous case studies of failed businesses, brands, and ideas, and goes beyond that to garner lessons and wisdom so that we all can learn from the greatest mistakes. Please make sure to visit our website, thegreatfail.com, for behind-the-scenes audio and video footage. If you like these episodes and want us to continue bringing you more, please subscribe to our newsletter because, well, not connecting with you would be our great fail. While you're at it, simply tell a friend about the show. That would help us out too. The research on each episode is extensive, but none of them would be possible without the tireless efforts of researchers, writers, and reporters. They are all credited on thegreatfail.com under our show notes. Lastly, you can connect with us on Instagram at thegreatfailpod, and please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on iTunes to show your support. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a brand new episode. And remember, folks, with great failure comes great liability.
I must confess, I did what I did, now my life's a mess.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.